The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
So I came back from my weekend in Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that. The unapologetic conference.
That's right.
Tell me what does that mean? Unapologetic.
Unapologetic. Obviously, it's a wordplay, right? Because I think a lot of Christians, because they don't know how to defend their faith or whatever, they somehow feel a little bit embarrassed about their faith. So I think the theme was, okay, let's learn about the why behind the what of our faith and just, you know, be unapologetic about it, you know, as we defend the faith. But
that you don't need to be ashamed of your faith.
Yeah, exactly. And their tagline was rational, gracious, and true.
What a great tagline. I like that.
Yeah. And the community there was fantastic. It was hosted by Riverwood Church Community in Winnipeg. And it was sold out with some over 400 people in attendance. And I also heard that, I think it's the, maybe I got it wrong, but I know I heard that the vice president, I think, of the Humanist Atheist and Agnostic Association of Manitoba was in attendance. In fact, he was part of the multi-faith panel on Saturday when they had...
Fantastic.
And I knew he actually stayed behind, so I can only hope that...
It sounds like you had an awesome time out there. We want to give a shout out to that church and just thank them for putting that conference on. Now, you were one of the keynote speakers, Steve?
Yes. Myself and Dan Rutherford, a local business person in Winnipeg, who's very, like, apologetically, he's very sharp.
You brought your toque, right?
Oh, yes.
Speaking of, well, what temperature was it out there?
It was like minus 20.
Oh, mercy.
Minus 17 to 20.
Now, for those of you that are in different parts of the country listening to this, we live in Vancouver, British Columbia area, and we got hit with like...
The deep freeze.
Yeah.
What, minus 7?
It was basically the perfect snowstorm.
It was, yeah.
You had Hawaii... You know, tropical moist air coming in with Arctic cold, and we got 2 feet of snow.
Very unusual for February.
Yeah, in a very short period of time. Like, what was it, like 24, 48 hours? We got 2 feet of snow?
Yeah.
And it just insane. I had to dig my car out, but poor Steve. So he's in Winnipeg, and it's been just dumping snow, and he gets back. And there's so much snow, he can't find his car in the airport.
So I'm looking around. So I brought my luggage out, right? And I'm carrying this, walking around in that weather for like 15 minutes, looking for my car. And I'm using my remote control to find my car, right? Just that one beep. That's all I need. Where is this thing? And then I find the car only to, you know, find it buried under two feet of snow.
Steve texted me a picture.
You need to put that in show notes.
Yeah, we're show noting that. It is unreal.
Yeah. But my faith in humanity was restored because a couple of my parking neighbors, they actually helped me out.
I couldn't believe the airport did nothing.
They were doing something, but they were just having trouble keeping up with all the drift, especially at the airport.
Oh, my goodness, you had a solid like 3 feet, it seems, in front of your car.
So you had no shovels. It was hand shovels?
Yeah, well, I was just using that, you know, snow brush thing. But then the guy next to me, he found this like big Rubbermaid tub lid. Oh, and so he started using that as innovative. A shovel and dug around the car. And then...
That kills the romance of being an itinerant speaker right there.
Right there. But having said that, it was a fantastic weekend. Lots of people were really encouraged. It was, again, a moment of clarity for me. You know, this is why I do what I do, mm-hmm. You know, helping believers really get solidified in their faith. And I can only hope that, you know, our humanist guest and probably others there were challenged in a good way. Yeah. So hopefully we can, you know, have a fruitful conversation down the road, whether it is with me or with somebody else.
One of these days, if you're listening to this, come out to the Apologetics Canada Conference.
Right, March 3rd
here,
and 4th.
Yeah, March 3rd and 4th, and experience a little bit of Vancouver, British Columbia.
Right on, right on. So, Terry, you have a couple of stories?
Yeah, I just want to keep us on the cultural edge you know, with some news items from you know, from our culture.
I'm slightly concerned when you started off like that.
Well, this one says Amish men claim city law requiring horse diapers violates their freedom of religion.
Wow.
Oh my God. I've been arguing for horse diapers for years now. Are you kidding me? Okay, first of all, you know what concerns me even more than that article? Where did you find that, man?
Like, oh,
what,
man, I have sources.
Where do you have to plumbing the depths of the internet?
For sure.
For horse diapers. Are you kidding me?
No, this is horse diapers. City of Ordinance of Auburn, Kentucky requires manure catching bags for horses.
You know what? I want to live in a city in which their problem is whether or not they should diaper their horse or not. You know what? That's my kind of city right there.
Well, think about it. It could get pretty slick if...
It could get poopy. There's no doubt about that.
It could get very poopy. Like, you don't want to be sliding and slipping in that stuff.
We worry about drive-by shootings and the like, but... in Auburn, horse diapers.
Well, right. You know, they claim because this is kind of modern technology, diapers.
Drive-by droppings.
Drive-by droppings.
That is hysterical.
That it goes against their religious faith.
I just don't even know what to say about that.
No, all right. Come on. Come on.
maybe we'll get into that next time when we talk about religious faith.
Right. That's Steve's way of saying we'll never talk about this again.
Yeah. Okay.
One more?
Yeah, sure. One more.
All right. Give us one more.
Okay. Have you heard of divorce selfies?
No, I haven't.
Whoa.
The new way to announce a split. So actually,
oh mercy! So it kind of like your engagement announcement. Now you announce on social media you're divorced.
You're divorced.
Oh,
hashtags.
My word.
Guess who's divorced?
Wow.
Hashtag divorce selfie.
Did you check out these hashtags?
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
do we dare?
Yeah.
Do we dare?
But wow. There's happy couples. You know, I saw one picture of a very happy couple with their selfie, just as right after they sign their papers.
Oh my goodness! When divorce is normalized and it gets mixed with social media, that's what we get. You know, it's. I mean, on a slightly more serious note, I mean, we talk about same-sex marriage and its effect on society and things like that, but really. No-fault divorce, that's done more to destroy family than same-sex marriage ever will, I think. But anyway, that's crazy stuff, man.
Yep.
Divorce selfies?
I'll keep it coming.
I appreciate that. Keep plumbing the depths of the internet for us, Crosby.
I know you guys weren't last week. You guys said you're taking a break. I still haven't gone back.
Really? I haven't gone back. You know, wow. You know what's interesting, before we get into the main topic here, I've been talking with a lot of people lately that have been taking a break from social media, which I find quite fascinating. It's an interesting cultural phenomenon right now where I think social media in some ways is just overwhelming for a lot of us, myself included. And you have to – it's interesting. You know, you'll often find that people say, oh, I'm going to take a break. But I'm finding more and more friends that are taking extended breaks and wondering whether or not they're even going to come back. But you know, this issue of technology is an important one. You know, as we think about where is technology helpful, when's it not, and how to, like, I don't know how about you guys, but learning just even to parent yourself with technology. I've gotten to the place now when I get home, I need to set my phone on its charger, which is in my bedroom, and just to get it away from me, because it's a way for work to follow you home. But this kind of leads into the topic that we want to get into with the direction that technology is going.
Yeah, The Atlantic, they do these short little animated video clips. They're fantastic. They're a lot of fun to watch, I find. But in November last year, they released one that talked about how technology is going to change the landscape of jobs in the next few decades. And so basically what this video, which I will put up on the show note, was talking about how technology will start replacing people in their jobs. And the first kinds of jobs that will be replaced will be ones that are typically associated with men. So stuff that requires a lot of visual processing, physical strength, dexterity, all these kinds of things will be the first ones to go. Because these things... machines are great at.
In other words, men have jobs that are easy to
be replaced.
Automate.
Yeah, to automate. That's exactly right. So on the other hand, though, machines, as we have them now anyway, are not very good at things like empathy or care or any really complex environment.
Social skills.
Yeah.
Computers suck at that.
Yeah. So, but then these are the kinds of traits that are usually associated with jobs that are typically feminine. So like nursing. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, they called them human skills, I think, on the video.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like collaboration, creativity, working with others, that empathy part to it. Mm-hmm. That's what they're mentioning.
But I remember also seeing another video that I haven't shown you guys that talked about how even those things are going to be emulated by machines, you know, not too distant in the future. Yeah. So like they will start creating like orchestra pieces or writing machines that can write and all that kind of stuff. So
and I'm, you know what, man, I get so skeptical about people talking about, oh, in the future we'll have this or that, especially when my phone to this day still can't figure out when I want to order a pizza or when I'm trying to find directions, and often just comes back and tells me, I'm sorry, Andy, I have no, you know, I don't.
I didn't understand.
I didn't understand. I'm like, I don't know how to make it any more clear to you.
It might be the user.
Yeah, it might be, Terry. But, so I love that when people are talking about artificial intelligence and like, can we just not figure out how to make it so my phone knows how to order a pizza? Like before we start talking about the thing becoming intelligent. But a lot of people wonder, you know, we all talk about, you know, where technology is going and people think, you know, how is it that technology can ever get there, especially even in our lifetime? But we actually did a topic on this not long ago called 21st Century Challenges
right.
to Christianity. And one of the things that we talked about in that, it kind of falls in line with this because I think it's surprising to a lot of people. And I was even thinking about this just with regards to 2016, how rapidly technology advanced just last year alone. And I was thinking about how much is going to happen in this 1 year. And so we're looking at, you know, where could technology be in 10 years from now? Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing, if you've ever heard of things like Moore's Law, is that technology is advancing rapidly. And in fact, according to Moore's Law, it doubles every year, particularly speaking about transistors per square inch in an integrated circuit. But what we're seeing is that there's an exponential growth factor to technology. And so talking about these things is incredibly important because technology has a way of creeping up on you in the sense that because it has an exponential growth factor to it, before you know it, you're dealing with things that before were hypotheticals.
For those of you who might think this is still, you know, way too science fiction-y, there was an article that was released by Maclean's, written by Chris Sorensen, that was talking about how the legal profession is having its Uber moment. And for those of you who are not familiar with Uber, it's that new taxi service, right? Anybody can sign up for it. And it's really taking the field by storm. Like a lot of taxi drivers are feeling threatened because they're getting replaced by this new startup. Chris Sorensen was basically making the point that there are groups, like a lot of AI research groups, that are basically set to replace the legal profession. So instead of a lawyer just going through a couple of cases and then making his judgment on that and shooting from the hips, now we're going to have AIs that can go through the entire library of cases that are related to, say, this new tax law and then make probability judgments as to how a particular judge might rule.
The Economist was writing about this recently as well with regards to medicine, that again, you have programs like IBM's Watson and others. There's a lot of other startups right now in the artificial intelligence business.
Especially in Toronto.
Yes.
There's a huge concentration of these kinds of things.
And they, by the way, they tend to be in cold locations because these computers need to be kept cooler. You know, because you have these rooms that are just full, you know, full of this computing power. And at any rate, they can do the same thing with medicine. So they can begin to mine all the different research journals that's coming out. And what they're finding is that humans are more and more needing technology to be able to keep up with technology. And so they're going to be integrated more and more. But in the same way, humans will be won't be needed in certain fields as much because the computer can do it much quicker and more accurate than a person can, in the sense as well that it's taking in vastly more amounts of information. But Steve, let's just back that up for a moment, because you talked about Uber. What a great example of where technology is replacing people with regards to taxi drivers. You know, here's a place in which technology is starting to replace the taxi field. Plus, Uber has made it very clear that their goal is to have automated vehicles in the future. This is what they're putting all of their capital in right now, so that you call up an Uber car and there's not a person there. It's just a car that will drive you to your location. But I mean, here's a field where by and large tends to be men that are taxi drivers. And I'm taking a wild guess there. I rarely see any female taxi drivers. But you know, they're not going to have a job in the near future, right? That's going to be automated. And it raises the question, what does that do to your culture? You know, how is that going to change things, such as are women going to be more employable in the future than men?
And what does that do to the individual as a person, right? I mean, we find our identity as men in work and job at times, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess my question, I mean, has this whole technological advances become our new religion? You know what I mean? Like, is it the focus now and being hailed as, you know, this great next big thing, the next big god?
I think there are, you know, people like, for example, the transhumanists who are really kind of taking it to that level, right? I think you, Andy, talked a little bit about that before.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm going to be speaking today at the BCIT, British Columbia Institute of Technology, on this very topic. That there's no doubt about the fact that technology is becoming a savior, that, you know, and it's becoming a religion in that vein. And that is definitely something that we should talk more about. However, I want to twist it a little bit with regards to the topic that we're on today. And that is when, you know, more than just a religion, when we're looking at technology, we're making value judgments about technology and what is good technology and what is not good technology. And I think there's a very interesting book that I've recommended before called Shaping a Digital World by Derek Sherman. And he makes the argument that technology isn't value neutral. You know, that things are created for specific purposes, like a bomb. And a bomb's not value neutral in that it has a purpose that it's designed for and is good at. You know, and although a bomb could be a paperweight, you know, it's meant for war. And what I'm getting at is this, because I think this is one of the big questions that as a society we have to think more about. And that is, where do we want our technology to go? And what is an appropriate thing to automate and what's not an appropriate thing to automate? You see, there's two different types of ways of going about technology right now. There's the artificial intelligence route that says, let's just take technology and let's make technology like a person or a person. You know, let's mimic a human being in technology. So that a machine could do anything that a human could do. But then there's the intelligence augmentation route that says, no, technology should be created to help people, not to replace people.
You know, that's a really interesting point, because when I was getting ready preparing that talk for the Thinking Series seminar last year, speaking on genetic engineering and things like that, you find that technology, like you said, it's created in a context of some sort. The question is, what kind of a worldview are we going to envelop this in?
Exactly. Because I can't help but argue that our society should be thinking about this preemptively, and we should be setting laws into place saying, you know what, there's some things that are inappropriate to automate, such as difficult as it is to find daycare. You know, there should be laws in place saying, you know what, you cannot automate your daycare provider. You can't automate that. Or let's say it's nursing. You can't automate nursing. You know, and setting rules or boundaries in place saying, listen, there's other things, though, that we in fact want you to automate. And yes, men are going to lose their jobs, but it's better for society and it's better for human beings because that task is too dangerous. You know, maybe it's with setting explosives. And, right. and we say, no, that should be automated. You should have machines setting those explosives because it's too dangerous for a human being to do that.
If we just go back to the lawyer article, there was some positives that came out of that, like from the AI program, gathering all the information. In the end, they said it would free up the courts a little bit more. It would free up the judge in dealing with these small little cases
right.
that could be just easily put through.
Right.
Right. And knowing all this information for that case.
Right. And it would make things a lot more affordable for people who would otherwise not be able to have legal access
yeah.
because of money.
Yeah.
See, and there you can see a spot where, okay, I think that this is an appropriate thing to automate and will be helpful for human beings. But but I don't hear that debate happening enough saying, should we or should we not do that? Is this good for society or not? Because the problem with a capitalist culture is it's all driven by the bottom dollar, right? So whenever we think about automation, we're always thinking, oh, is it profitable, right? Instead of, is this good for society? See, this is one of the things that concerns me in many ways with where our culture is going with technological advances. A recent Pew research came out that 16% of Americans think that a four-year college degree prepares students well for a high-paying job. There's not a lot of stock these days being put into four-year degrees or going to school. And in fact, there's a lot of pop-up education facilities right now that are helping to teach you how to be a coder. And this raises really interesting questions about education, doesn't it? I mean, is education meant to make good workers or good people?
Unfortunately, that's how our university has been corrupted, I would say. I would even go so far as to say corrupted, because before, education meant that, you know, we were going to train good human beings, right? I mean, we are going to create human beings or nurture human beings in just such a way that they are people of character and virtue and things like that. That was what was important. But now our university is basically being treated as a job training grounds, right? And of course, if this university system isn't keeping up with how technology is being developed, being advanced, and how the jobs are being changed and things like that, then you're going to just abandon that and go do something else.
I met a guy the other day. He has a PhD in literature. And he ended up abandoning all of that, all of his education, because it was much more profitable for him to learn how to do coding. So he did that. He did like some sort of 18-month course on how to become a computer coder. And now that's what he does, right? But I still wouldn't think that his education was a waste just because he wasn't able to get a job doing it or chose not to get a job doing that. I guess that's the part then that really concerns me about our culture is by and large – capitalism is driving our culture to such a degree that it's becoming the value judgment. And that, I think, becomes really problematic in a culture.
So I think, I mean, as people in the culture right now, it seems like we're on the edge of this explosion of technological advances.
By the way, if I could just pause you right there real quick. So keep that.
Yeah.
So if you want to know what Terry's talking about, I'll just give you some quick stats here. Ray Kurzweil, who Bill Gates said is one of the best people that he knows at predicting the future. Kurzweil said this. He said, by 2020, humans will be able to change their genes. By 2023, computers will be working at the speed of the human brain and cost around $1,000. By 2025, nano machines will be possible. By 2025, the military will have 100% unmanned aerial vehicles. By 2029, we expect computers to pass the Turing test. So in other words, by 2029, he sees that computers will be able to mimic a human being.
To the point where we can't really distinguish it. If we hadn't known that this is actually a machine, we would just assume that this was a human being that we're interacting with.
And so these things are coming quickly.
They're coming quickly. As a human right now, I feel anxious about that. For me as a Christian, what is the limits that we put on that? Do you feel if we don't pursue technological advances, humanity will lose at this time? Like, as a Christian, should we move forward in this?
Well, I keep thinking...
Or is it going to overtake us in a very negative way, right? Like,
well, that's the problem, right? Because as I've been thinking more and more about this, I'm like, well, what are we saying then? Like, are we saying that we should become Amish, right? And that we should avoid all technology and we need to embrace just, you know, only a certain level of technology is okay?
If you think about it, I mean, even the Amish, they use technology, right? I mean, the carts, the horse-drawn carriage.
Horse diapers.
That's technology. So basically, what is technology? Technology is basically something that you create, something that you put together to meet a certain kind of challenge, right? And that's what we mean by technology. Science is a systematized body of knowledge and the methods that go into it, that self-correcting discipline. That's what we mean by science. So we're talking about technology here. I mean, even the Amish use technology.
Yeah, they've just limited how far they're willing to let technology
exactly
advance.
So it's not that they shun technology altogether. They draw a line at a certain point.
As far as I'm concerned, technology is a freight train, man. It's moving forward. To me, there's no stopping technology. It's going to continue to move forward at an ever increasing pace, assuming that it doesn't max out due to physical laws such as the speed of light and whatnot. Which is why, by the way, quantum computing is of such interest right now. Is can Moore's law continue in the foreseeable future at this exponential growth factor? That's a whole nother conversation, but. My point, though, Terry, going back to what you're saying, is technology is going to keep going. My thing is, my concern as a society is it's going at such a pace that nobody's stopping to think, where should we direct where it's going? That it's going is one thing. It's where it's going, and that's why the other day when I paneled that discussion that I told you guys about, and here's an engineer from Google in the audience, and they're asking, you know, do you think what we're doing in this field or that field is good or bad? You know, because they're like, we're trying to think of that ourselves. And I'm like, well, those are the kind of conversations we should be having a whole lot more.
I mean, it seems to me like the tagline for this whole technological advances is like, what can be done should be done. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost open-ended to a point where, like, just go for it. And that seems problematic to me.
Yeah, and you find that, for example, the country of Japan is a lot like that. And I think it's partially because they don't come from that tradition like in the Western civilization of the kind of sanctity of individual human life, that sort of a thing. And so they have no problem moving ahead. I mean, they're even testing out machines for taking care of children, like at daycare.
That's why I brought up that example.
Yeah. But if you've noticed, though, as we're talking about technology and things like that, the discussion around technology is constantly just filled with value judgments. Is this good or is this bad? And my question is, how do you even get there? How do you even get to the concept of good and bad? How are you making that judgment? Is this a matter of utilitarian ethic?
Well, isn't that a major challenge, Steve?
Right.
Because now you're coming back to, what worldview are you operating from?
Exactly. And that's the key thing. What worldview are we going to envelop this in? Because that, depending on how you do it, you could have another, you know, Unit 731, you know, the biochemical research unit from Imperial Japanese Army that have done horrible things to human subjects. Or you can have something more like, you know, using technology to actually help human beings.
You see, this is why it's worldview dependent. You've got one worldview that says, oh, you know, everything's just physical, right? And this is where the Turing test comes down to. The Turing test basically works off of the premise that we're a biological code. And machines are, you know, a binary code, and you should be able to code a machine in a similar way that you and I are coded biologically, and you should be able to get a person that's just silicon.
Yeah, and vice versa, right? And that's where genetic engineering comes in. You know, we're just a bunch of codes, so just as we can code like silicon material, basically, we should be able to code ourselves and enhance ourselves, whatever enhance means.
This is what leads to this idea of transhumanism or beyond human, and saying, okay, well, let's just take control of the direction of humanity and we'll now direct it. great, but what's the worldview that you're operating from that is directing where you'll go?
Because often it's just assumed and never really argued for.
Exactly. It reminds me of the subtitle of Darwin's book, The Origin of Species, which many people forget. And the subtitle is For the Preservation of Favored Races. And this raises that is a worldview, right? That's operating. What now becomes the favored race? We've seen in the past where technology can be used to do horrible things
right.
to human beings. And as we move forward, we want to move to a place in which technology is helpful to people. But this is going to be worldview dependent on where you're directing this freight train, as I've called it.
Again, over and over again, especially when I'm talking about technology and things like that, I always come to that doctrine of Imago Dei, mm-hmm. you know, the image of God in human beings, you know, and because that I find them, I mean, I haven't come across any other plausible account of human dignity and human worth. People talk about human dignity all the time without right. actually grounding it in anything.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it, Steve? I haven't found a way to ground it outside of subjectivity.
Right.
Other than in Christianity. And that's because this gets back to this worldview problem that many people have heard me talk a lot about. And that is, if you're working from a purely physical worldview, there is no way to objectively substantiate human value. It is always subjective. And in fact, it's subjective to the degree that there even is no such thing as value.
We're out of time here, so unfortunately we can't go on anymore. There's lots more to talk about here, but maybe we'll talk about it another time, because this seems to be the kind of topic that we seem to come back to from time to time.
It just continues to show up in news feeds and magazines like crazy right now.
Yeah, so I'm sure we'll come back to this topic again. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about. Thanks for joining us.